9. The vulnerability of Western assessments. Given that communist regimes practice disinformation in time of peace on a scale unparalleled in the West, it is essential to determine the pattern of disinformation that is being followed if Western studies and assessments are to avoid serious error. Once the pattern has been established, it provides criteria for distinguishing reliable from unreliable sources and genuine information from disinformation. Determining the pattern is difficult, if not impossible, unless reliable inside information is available. Here a distinction should be noted between the communist sources and the Western sources. All the communist sources are permanently available as natural channels for communist disinformation. Western sources are in general less available as channels, but can become so to a varying extent depending upon whether their existence is or is not known to the communist side. With communist sources, the problem is to detect how they are being used for disinformation. With Western sources, the problem is twofold: to determine whether they have been compromised to the communist side, and if so, whether they are being used for disinformation purposes. Since Western sources are in general less vulnerable than communists to exploitation for purposes of disinformation, they tend to be regarded as more reliable than the communist sources, which are completely open to exploitation. However, if Western sources are compromised, and particularly if the West does not know, or does not wish to acknowledge, that they have been compromised, they can become unreliable and even dangerous. Conversely, if the pattern of disinformation is known and if an adequate method of analysis is used, even communist sources can reveal reliable and significant information. The ideal situation for the West is when its intelligence services have reliable sources of information at the policy-making level, when adequate methods of analysis are applied by the West to communist sources, and when the pattern of communist disinformation is known. These three factors react on one another to their mutual advantage. The inside sources provide information bearing on the adequacy of Western analysis. They also help to determine the pattern of disinformation and provide timely warning of any changes in it. The pattern of disinformation, once established, and a proper analysis of communist sources together lead to an accurate assessment of Western secret sources and to the exposure of the tainted ones among them. The trouble is, however, that the effectiveness of Western intelligence services cannot be taken for granted. Apart from the general obstacles to the acquisition of reliable, high-level inside information on the communist world, there are special risks of reliable sources becoming compromised through their own mistakes or through communist penetration of Western intelligence services. Some Western sources, for example, listening devices, can be detected and exploited by the communist side for disinformation purposes without the Western services concerned being penetrated. But the major factor that has damaged the effectiveness of Western services has been penetration by their communist opponents. This has compromised Western sources and enabled the communist side to use them as channels for disinformation. If Western intelligence services lose their effectiveness and themselves become channels for communist disinformation, this in turn damages Western analysis of communist sources and results in failure to detect the pattern of communist disinformation and any changes there may be in it. When all three factors, Western ability to obtain secret information, Western ability to interpret communist sources, and Western ability to understand disinformation, are themselves adversely affected by the consequences of penetration and disinformation, then the whole process of Western assessment of communist affairs is vitiated, and the real problems and real changes in the communist world cannot be distinguished from fictitious and deceptive ones. Doubtful information from official, unofficial, or secret communist sources confirms or is confirmed by disinformation fed through compromised Western secret sources. Information deliberately leaked by the communist side is accepted as reliable by the West. Genuine information, fortuitously received by the West, may be questioned or rejected. In this way, the errors in Western assessments become not only serious, but also irreversible unless and until the pattern of disinformation is correctly established. The critical condition of the assessment process in the West is the more serious because it is unrecognized and undiagnosed. If Western assessments of the communist world are wrong, then Western miscalculations and mistakes in policy will follow. These miscalculations and mistakes will be exploited by the communist side to their own advantage. When this happens and the Western mistakes are recognized by the public, the politicians, diplomats, and scholars associated with those mistakes are discredited and a basis is laid for the emergence of extremist bodies of opinion. The rise of McCarthyism in the United States after the failure of American post-war policy in Eastern Europe and China is an obvious example. The consequences of different patterns of disinformation. The character of Western miscalculations depends to a large degree on the pattern of communist disinformation. During a crisis in the communist system, when the facade and strength pattern of disinformation is used, the West is confused about the real situation in communist countries and fails to perceive the weakness of their regimes. A convincing, but spurious, facade of monolithic unity is built around the actual explosive realities of the communist world. Spurious though it is, the facade is liable to be taken at its face value by Western observers and even governments. Their overestimate of the strength and cohesion of the apparent monolith inhibits them from taking proper steps to exploit an actual crisis in the communist world. The crisis in the Bloc, 1949-56. Undoubtedly, there was some realization in the West of the difficulties in the communist world in the years immediately preceding and following Stalin's death. But facade and strength disinformation successfully concealed the existence of genuine Sino-Soviet differences between 1950 and 1953. It also veiled the acuteness of the revolutionary situation in Eastern Europe. If the depth of the crisis there had been more fully appreciated in the West, a more active and helpful Western response to the events in Poland and Hungary might have been forthcoming. Part or all of Eastern Europe might have been liberated altogether. During the implementation of a long-range policy, a weakness and evolution pattern of disinformation is used. Again, the West is confused about the real strength of communist regimes and, this time, about their policies as well. A convincing picture is built up of the decline of ideology and the emergence of competing national entities in the communist world. Although this image is false and is deliberately projected by the communist regimes, it is liable to be accepted at face value by the West as an accurate reflection of spontaneously occurring political developments. On this basis, the West tends to underestimate the strength and cohesion of the communist world and is encouraged to overlook the necessity for proper defensive measures. Furthermore, it can be misled into taking offensive steps that unintentionally serve the ends of communist policy and provide opportunities for future exploitation by the communist side to Western disadvantage. Of the two patterns of disinformation, the second has potentially the more serious consequences for the West in that, if applied successfully, it can adversely affect Western offensive and defensive measures. The first inhibits Western offensive measures only and serves to harden its defense. The Second World War. Soviet expansionism was helped by disinformation during the Second World War. Without in any way questioning the necessity of the wartime anti-fascist alliance between the Soviet Union and the Western Allies, it is legitimate to point out that the alliance was successfully exploited by the Soviet Union to further its own political objectives. There is scope for a detailed historical study of the methods and channels used by the Soviet regime to influence and disinform the American and British governments before the Tehran and Yalta conferences about the real nature of the Soviet regime and its intentions. American and British archives should yield additional information on the influence exerted by Soviet agents in the U.S. State Department and British Foreign Office, such as Donald McLean and Guy Burgess. Point one. Meanwhile, a few points may be made to illustrate the use of the themes of the decline of ideology, the rise in nationalist influence, and the disunity and lack of cooperation between communist parties. During the wartime alliance, ideological criticism of the United States and Great Britain virtually disappeared from the Soviet press. Revolutionary ideology, though never wholly abandoned, was soft-pedaled. Old Russian traditions were glorified. Former Tsarist ranks and decorations were restored in the Red Army. A new respect was shown for religion. Stalin held a public audience for Russian church leaders in 1943. The common dangers confronting the Soviet Union and the West and their common interest in survival were emphasized and described as providing a basis for future cooperation. Western statesmen and diplomats were told that a post-war liberalization of the Soviet regime and its evolution into a national, Western type of nation-state were inevitable. They were even flattered with the idea that these changes would take place under Western influence. Soviet acceptance of the Atlantic Charter in 1941 and signature of the United Nations Pact on January 1, 1942 should be seen as part of the effort to raise Western expectations of favorable developments in the Soviet Union. But the most striking and significant deception designed to mask continuing active cooperation between communist parties and convince the Western allies that revolutionary objectives had been abandoned was the dissolution of the Comintern in May 1943. 6 months before the Tehran conference. Allied with this deception were the themes that the Soviet Union and the Red Army were fighting only for the liberation of Eastern Europe from fascism and had no thought of establishing communist regimes in that area.